Hey, everybody. I am Elliot. I am an alcoholic. All right. So, this is interesting. Thanks for the opportunity to allow me to tell my story, Bill. And thanks for introducing me, Matt. I guess what it was like. My life was, there were no excuses. I grew up with a really good family. My parents were educated. They are educated. My mom always taught me to rely on God, and my father always taught me to use my brain. And those were two things that the ideas of them were nice, but I had no experience with like using either of them. There was no abuse. I was never molested. I grew up playing sports, trying to find my place in life. If it wasn't baseball, it was basketball. If it wasn't basketball, it was wrestling. If it wasn't wrestling, it was fencing. I mean, anything to get to give me something to be a part of. And I think that's a theme of my life, all the way up until Alcoholics Anonymous. I was always searching for an identity. I was always searching for peace. I was always searching for being right, being okay. And that just never happened. Eventually, everything I would throw myself into would fizzle up, would mean nothing to me. And my parents, being the loving people that they are, you know, money was not an issue. Love was not an issue. Principles were not issues. Christianity was, God was an issue. I had all of that. There was no excuse for me to end up where I did. So, you know, of course, they would just throw their time, their effort, their energies towards me. And being the alcoholic addict that I am, I just take advantage of it over and over and over again. Their resources, their love, all that stuff it meant something to me, but I hadn't, like, I really had no idea what it meant at the time. So as I progressed from, like, a young kid into my high school years, there weren't too many voices in my head. There was just the constant feeling of being on edge. And I went from a real small school, a real small Catholic school, like 200 kids, to my dad was like, hey, why don't we change you over into Paul the VI Catholic High School? And I had like 3,000 kids or something. And I said, okay, that'd be awesome. Because he was concerned about my college opportunities and all sorts of that, like that kind of stuff. Just like he wanted to afford to me, just like my father in heaven, he wanted to give me everything I possibly needed to be successful, to be able to execute, to be able to live properly. And I just fell on my face like every time. So I went to this school, and I just jumped social group to social group. Used professor, used teacher after teacher. You know, poor me, poor me. I always had excuses. I liked to present to people that I had principles. Like with guys, there's this expression called bros over hoes, and that wasn't me. You know, I was very much like, get what I want, when I want it, how I want it, but still give the impression that I care about other people. I kind of had one foot in and one foot out, right? My high school experience was just chaos. I was by no means like a cool kid or popular. I did everything in my power to just shed my family, shed everything they taught me, shed everything that they were trying to encourage me to do. And I wanted to figure it out all on my own. I still have a very big head, but I wanted to do it all on my own, no matter what the consequences, I guess. So, if you can see, like, so far, external stuff was always my solution. Sports, different school, different state, different friends, different clothing, different music. I mean, I was willing to sacrifice and compromise my entire self so that I could have a feeling of being a part of, or being okay, being right. And those things continued to fail me. And then I continued to, like, and at this point in high school, I started to get resentful because I knew. I'd look around and I'd see my brother, who's like 3 or 4 years older than me, who's who you set something in front of him, he goes and does it. And that's just what it is. There's no issue. And I saw other kids who just, you know, exams were coming up or they had to ask a girl on a date or whatever. Like, they just did these things. And it was so foreign to me. It was so uncomfortable and terrifying. And it left me in a place of just pain, I guess. So I got real resentful. And who better to take it out on than the people closest to me? Because I couldn't figure out how to live. I couldn't figure out what other people were doing that was getting them where they needed to be. So my go-to reaction from high school throughout college up until Alcoholics Anonymous was just to flip it. Just to, in the sense, what I mean by that is just to go off the edge. Just to kamikaze into life. In and out of relationships. In and out of job positions. I basically wanted other people to take care of me. Whether it was my parents, or girlfriends, or friends, and even in Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning, my sponsor, which is awful. So, I guess just because I don't want to bore you with that stuff, I was just a very broken guy. Super scared. Looked in the mirror and I'm always wondering, do I look okay? Do I look good? Do people like me? Do I have what it takes to do? Or who the hell am I actually? Right? I just got so lost as my life went on. As I got closer, further away from my parents and further away from them, I lost more and more of who I was. And again, I'm willing to sacrifice everything that I'm raised with just to be a part of. And that really sucked. Because I remember whether I was out with people drinking or just sorted places, sorted people, groups of friends. I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. I knew something was wrong. I knew something was off. But the easiest thing for me as an alcoholic addict to say is just F it. Screw it. Right? I'll let somebody else pick up the pieces. Because that's been the theme of my life. Like, everyone takes care of me, and then when I make a mess, everybody else takes care of it. So there was no ownership, there was no responsibility in my life. I even went to military school after that high school. And all that did was teach me a lot about paraphernalia, drugs, fun stuff, I guess, at the time. I didn't know enough. I had no idea what honor was, or valor, or patience, or being persistent, any of that stuff. I knew how to wear a uniform. I knew how to look the part. I knew how to, like, talk a certain way. I knew how to get surface level with people. But I guess after doing that for so many years and being so fake for such a long period of time, like, and just one day you wake up and you don't know who the hell you are. So my story with, like, alcohol and drugs, I guess, obviously, that just fixed it. That took precedence over everything that I did. Who I hung out with, where I went. And how long was I going to have to be at dinner with my family? When could I get away? You know, kids that were invested in me, friends that, like, really cared about me, you know, in a matter of minutes or seconds, one day they're my best friends, the next day I don't even know who they are. Because I was willing to dispose people like that. I was willing to just trash relationships so I could get with the people who had it going on. And what I mean by that is obviously the people that aren't showing up in life, that are staying out crazy late, having lots of fun, getting in all sorts of kind of behavior. And it just left me broken. So I guess that stuff worked for a while. But somewhere along the line, like in college, I remember just waking up and crying. I used to watch stuff on television on Sundays, like spiritual programming, to try and get some hope. I even tried going to Catholic church one time or twice. And I just knew that, like, I was such a counterfeit and such a fraud. I didn't have what it took. I had no experience. I was 24, 25 years old. And I had nothing to show for it other than what other people had done for me. Like my parents putting me through school or, you know, being on athletic teams and stuff. There was really nothing that I had done for myself. So I was a big child all my life. And so I just remember waking up in college and crying and wanting to shoot myself or wanting to die. I remember the quality of the people I hung out with started to deteriorate faster and faster and faster. And my morals and what I was willing to be okay with just disintegrated or just deteriorated to the point where, I just didn't know who I was. I was like, you take a stance on something? Cool, I'm going to do that. Or I took the stance of, I'm cool with everybody, right? Because I had no identity. I had no idea where I was from, where I was going, and who I was. It was absolutely terrifying. Of course, the whole time drinking solved that. Brought me into the here and now, made me feel right. I don't think I ever like really planned on getting drunk all the time. I just wanted to get right, you know. And it just got me to a place where I could live life successfully, I guess. But that was all a lie. And you know, as drinking took more and more of a role in my life, sports became less important. I got less active. If you saw pictures of me in college, you wouldn't recognize me. Professors didn't even really know me. I mean, the people that really knew me were the little dude at the gas station that sold blunt wraps and the liquor store guy. That's it. There were no relations in my life. And then come like exam time, I was the guy that would go up to professors and be like, "You just don't understand. My mom died again." Or right? It was just awful. There were always excuses. There was always just more and more lies on top of more lies. And of course, like, I don't think anyone ever like tried to help me in those situations because they were like, "This kid's got it bad." They were like, "Man, this kid is sick. This kid needs all the like." Need something that I can't give to them. They just pitied me, so they'd give me like a C. Anyways, it was no more fun. It was fun. It was not like fun anymore. And I remember like I had a running buddy this whole time from military school. His name was P. And P was encompassed everything I wanted to be. He was my roommate in my first, we went to military school together, and then he was my roommate in college. And I remember this guy just encompassed like Tony Montana or Pablo Escobar. He just loved those guys, right? And I was like, "Well, that kid's cool. I'm going to go with that." You know? Completely like delusional. Because I grew up with a dad that was just, he is amazing. He's a real man. Like, he goes to any lengths for my mom and for my family. But anyways, so I grew up with this kid, and the reason I bring him up is because like we had a good relationship, and in the sense like he had my back, I thought, and I had his back, or I wanted him to believe that, even though I was terrified all the time. I could act like a tough guy, but I'm really not. I'm just like a coward, and I'm a broken man. So anyways, I looked at him one time when we were drinking and stuff, and I think it was probably the first time I noticed a voice in my head, and it was like, "You're checking him out." And I was like, "What the fuck? What is that? Where did that come from?" And I knew I wasn't, but somehow my mind started to have conversations. It was no longer just like, "I feel scared, I feel excited, I feel uncomfortable." It was, "You're crazy, dude. What are you doing here?" Or, "You're not good enough," or all sorts of internal dialogue, right? And it started with that one voice. And my gut reaction was to go smoke again, drink again, pound another beer, hit something in me, because that was, whoa, that was crazy. I never experienced that before. And then I think that's where it really started deteriorating. He was the only friend I had. And I started to feel really, really different compared to everybody else. I knew that I couldn't survive or I couldn't live my day without having liquor in me or a drink in me or something. And it was awful. Because it wasn't fun anymore. I think that's where a lot of alcoholics get. Where it's not like a party anymore. It's not even maintenance. It's like doom. I feel absolutely buried under all of this stuff that I don't even know how I got here. And I obviously do. I can watch myself, but then I never signed up for any of that stuff. So things progressively got worse. And then what I mean by that was when I was in college, or when I graduated military school. I'm sorry, I'm jumping around. I don't really do this that often. When I graduated military school, I had a girlfriend at the time, and I was like, screw my family, screw my parents. I like flicked them off or something, and she picked me up from my barracks on graduation day and took me somewhere in like Middleburg, Virginia or somewhere, I forget. And I just like lived there and shacked up with some people. And of course I got broken down and I couldn't like manage on my own, so I called my parents, and of course they were there to save me. They were there to bail me out. And when I came home, and while I was home, I remember not respecting anything like that they had like put in place. Like we would make little like contracts, like Elliot will do this, this, and this by such and such a date, and if not, the consequences are whatever, right? You know, like no car, or you know, have to pay X amount in rent or something. They were really trying with me, like trying so hard, and they had no idea what was going on, and I had no idea what I was dealing with. So, like, I guess I could just get into the stuff that happened. I remember after military school and throughout college, like they were just always there to try and help direct me, and I would just use them constantly, give them the idea that things would change. Kind of like the same thing I do with girlfriends or whoever else. Like, oh, it's not just the last time I'm drinking, it's the last time I'll be abusive, or it's the last time I'll verbally talk to you like that, or it's the last time for this, that, and the other, whatever. And that didn't change. It got worse, worse, and worse. And I remember after college, I got a job as an orthopedic trauma device rep. And when I moved to Chattanooga, because I practiced a little bit in D.C. at Children's, and then I got to Chattanooga and I worked out at like Erlanger and a couple other hospitals. Well, I picked my apartment because it was right next to a bar. So that's kind of where my mind was at, right? And then I found the most needy, broken waitress I could at this bar. Right? And I said to myself, she's it. And she was a really sweet girl. I didn't know I was going to take her hostage and just destroy her life. But, I got with her. And, on one hand, I'm making like X amount of dollars and I'm doing really well. And then this girl's on like food stamps or something. And we're just going to live happily ever after. Not that that's bad, it's just we're like two different places, and it was going to be real interesting. Right. So then I just remember like more time was spent focused on going out than was like preparing for my cases, learning new implant procedures, getting new doctors to sign on. Like my life when I wasn't in the OR was absolutely focused on just getting drunk, getting obliterated, feeling good, living the party life. Because I didn't go to Cancun, I didn't go to Panama City, I didn't go to like Europe for two semesters to study abroad. It's time for me to take care of what I want to do. And of course, I got this job because my brother was a rep, so I really didn't have like too much of a ability. It was just someone was willing to give me a shot, and I blew it. They eventually fired me, but they said, we're going to let you go with pay on Christmas. And I said, okay, cool. And that was like my mentality. It was like, I'm willing. Like, it wasn't, oh my gosh, what am I doing? It was, well, this is cool. I have a check now and I can live for another like 6 months up here. Just kind of get myself together. reminds me of when I hear, like, this is a selfish program. Like, time to take care of me. Time to get my things together. That was a lie. So, yeah, I just got fired and moved home. And I brought a bunch of craziness with me. I ended up going to Florida for like 2 days to try and pick up a boat with that girlfriend I had from Chattanooga. And she drove into a palm tree in my dad's H2 and just totaled the car. And I was out of like all the stuff that I needed to feel okay. And like alcohol wasn't doing anything to help me. She got put in jail. I told her, we're going to make it work, don't worry. She stayed down there for 6 months, and I went home and just like a dog with its tail between his legs, just like a coward, right? I'm so sorry. It's going to get good when I get to the station. I'm trying to qualify, but I think we all get it. Like, alcohol fucking sucks, right? Like, I wanted to kill myself. I'll just fast forward, so... I'm just thinking. I couldn't live with it or without it. I had like a job at Andretti's and Thomasville Furniture, and I was a designer 1 month, a car salesman the next. Like, it's not this, I gotta do this, you know. It's like always changing external stuff. Just like it's easier to change my hairstyle, or if I had more hair, I guess, but it's easier for me to like change how I look externally than it is to work on the internal, because I never want to look at that. And I think that's where we'll get with Alcoholics Anonymous. But suicidal thoughts started to come, started to withdraw from people, started to isolate, blinds got drawn. Drugs and alcohol used to be outside of my house with people. Now it was in my house where my parents sleep, and bringing all sorts of types of people over, and just death. Not that I mean like I died. I don't mean that. I mean like in a sense of death, like the quality of life was death. It was awful. There was nothing, there was no hope. And I remember putting guns to my head just to see how it would feel. I remember... like, no consequence. I was numb to consequences. Like, my mom crying didn't change anything. I remember one time I was really messed up, and I hugged my mom really hard to try and hurt her. And I'd be like, Mom, what's wrong? You know, I was a really, really bad guy. Really, like, snaky. Just like a coward. I remember I got a battery charge on my dad under the influence. And my dad's like, if you met him, you'd be like, really? This guy? He's so awesome. He's a real man. And, yeah. So this kind of thing started happening. And one night I remember alcohol wasn't working anymore. The bar wasn't working anymore. There was no, like, kidding myself. Like, I don't have what it takes. I can't hold a freaking job. I've been given everything, a college degree, professors have helped me, my parents have helped me, and it was just awful. And I was out, and I saw what I thought was a girl, and I guess it wasn't, and I was like, what's up? And they were like, what's up? I was like, you want to hang out? And they were like, sure. So I was like, cool. And I remember, like, again, willing to compromise, willing to be okay with whatever to try and fix this condition that I had, that wanted me dead, that tells me that I'm not shit, tells me that I'm a counterfeit. It's like the best friend to walk around with all the time. It's awful. And I remember going home and being like, well, come over and hang out. We hung out, and I was about to, like, I guess make a move, and then I just stopped like right here. And I saw like, you know, the masculine features of this person. And it woke me up. It was a God shot, I guess. It was definitely like a third step experience. I don't really know. Felt the nearness of my creator or something. So, anyways, That was really uncomfortable. And I say that not, you know, I know it's funny and we can laugh about it. I love laughing and joking about this kind of stuff now. But, you know, since I've come into this program, I recognize that people are broken way past not being able to drink. There's a reason there's a harms list, sex list, fears list, resentment list. There's a reason, you know, this program got me God. And I'll get there. So let me just make sure all that crap's out of the way. After that, I just try to drink to forget about it. Like, you were just, it was an off night. You're good. Everything's cool. Just keep on keeping on, bro. You can do it. That wasn't the case. Because, again, alcohol wasn't working. Bars weren't working. People weren't working. Girls or guys weren't working. Right? And then, what was it that brought me just to the point? Oh, I remember. One night I called my dad just completely out of my mind. And they were at Big Canoe. And I just started crying on the phone after I was talking to him for a while. I said, please don't send me away, because I felt like I had lost my entire mind. There was no safe place. There was not like, go in your happy place, Elliot. Like, this was a freaking land, like a war zone. It was awful. And my dad came out at like 7 a.m. with my mom, and he was like, you need to go to a meeting. I said, I'll do whatever I have to. So, I had DUIs. That doesn't mean I'm an alcoholic. I had those in college. What really got me was just the complete, you know, demoralization that I went through. Bankruptcy in all areas of my life. So that put me in the place where I didn't know anything, and I was willing to do whatever it took. And I didn't really know what that looked like. And I don't really know even what going to any length was. I was just like, I'm going to a meeting. I went to a meeting in Roswell. These people took care of me in the first meeting. And not everyone was like, oh, it's going to be okay. Come on in. It was just like, sit down. And I saw people smiling. I saw that, like, you know, apparently these people don't drink. I'm going to give it a shot. And a young guy named Brett walked up to me and asked me if I needed a sponsor. I said, sure. I said, absolutely. And that's where my journey begins, in Solution, in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think the beginning of killing off the old man and the being born as a new man. So this is the part I like. So my first year in Alcoholics Anonymous, I quit, changed sponsors like 4 times. I was really sensitive. Still am. But again, changing the external, you know. Let's look at the external. Maybe it's the wrong home group. Maybe it's the wrong sponsor. Maybe I'm in the wrong state. Maybe I should have bought a big book. Right? And that was not the case. I was not willing. I liked the idea of hope. I liked the idea of recovery. But I was not willing to do what it took to do it. The idea was cool with me. The idea got me to a place where people were like, keep coming back. Put the plug in the jug. Come on. We're on fire. We're gonna be abstinent. And I was like, I can do that. But after a while, the idea of sobriety was not enough to keep me. And the pain, it was untreated alcoholism that appears in my life as OCD, as depression, anxiety, suicidal ideations, homicidal ideations. That was untreated. Like, just being a part of didn't solve that. And I finally got to Howe Place and met my current sponsor, and we went into catastrophe control. He asked me, how do you inventory? I was like, well, you know, I look at stuff, and he's like, well, what is this affecting? And I remember him saying, like, when you answer that question, Elliot, it's like golf or your career. I mean, I don't know. Like, you have no idea what your instincts are. So I realized very quickly that 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous laid out or outlined on the wall, it's not my program. I tried that for 2 years. That's not the easier, softer way. Easier, softer way is in the book. And I think God was very gracious with me, very, very patient with me, and He walked me. I went to Ridgeview 3 months sober because I was freaking out all the time. I thought I needed medication. Sometimes I did. I mean, did a lot of drugs and a lot of alcohol. Anyway, so I came in and my surrender was very slow. Some things die very slowly. And again, God was very graceful with me. I used to sit way in the back of the rooms. And then I started coming closer to the people who actually work programs, right? I don't think it was alcohol that really convinced me to want to work a program, though. It was, I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I go to meetings. I try and share. I make coffee. And I still want to kill myself. I still want to die. What is wrong with me? You know? And that put me in a place where I was willing to do whatever it took. So I got with people who go to the book. And I learned that step one does not mean that I can't drink. It means that I'm going to drink. Unless I get God. Very simple. Right? So, that means if I got prejudice against God, too bad. Let it go. If I got prejudice against Alcoholics Anonymous, too bad. Let it go. I mean, I don't think Alcoholics Anonymous is the only way to get sober, but it's worked for me, and this is what I do. I don't think it has a monopoly or whatever. So I learned that step one is you have no choice. You're going to drink again, and that's just the way it is. And I said, cool, I got that. I believe that. Because I remember, like, sometimes I didn't want to, and I did anyways. And sometimes I had every reason in the world not to, and I'd get a possession charge the day before a job interview for a spinal company. Like, it's craziness. And then they told me, you know, and I guess step one puts me in a place of just, like, I'm screwed. There's no hope. There's nothing for me. And then they followed up with a really cool one. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I said, okay, I'll believe that. And I just went on to step three. I mean, when I'm in a position of I want to shoot myself or I want to die or I can't stop drinking, I can't show up in life, there's really, like, you want to sit and pontificate on that? You want to brainstorm what that could look like? You just want to go with it. You want to disconnect from your brain for a minute and listen to people that do this for, like, every day and they've had results. I said, okay. And then third step prayer. Made a decision to turn our will over and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. When I know my truth in step one, that's not hard to do. When I know that there's no choice whether I drink or not, that's not hard to do. All the rest of these steps, 2 to 12, to me, in my experience, they're useless if I don't understand really what they're presenting in the first, like, quarter of the book in Alcoholics Anonymous. Right? So I just said, I'll go with it. I'm willing to do that. And I had tons of prejudice. You know, I used to jump in and out of confessionals because I masturbated. I wouldn't receive communion in Catholic Mass and all sorts of stuff. I felt so crazy, dude. And I would go back and forth to different priests, like, I know I was just here, but I just want to ask, did I remember to say this? And they'd be like, Elliot, you're good, and go. 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 So, I said, that's not working. And I think internally I know that that's not truth, right? So I said the third step prayer, and in the beginning, I just meant it with alcohol, not romance or finance. Do that and you'll learn that that won't work. And you'll need to go to God with everything, not just alcohol. But this is my experience. So I did it first. You know, all right, cool. You can have the alcohol, but stay out of my pockets. Stay out of bedroom. And then made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Again, if you understand step one, this shouldn't be a problem. If you're taking 2-3 weeks to do this, yeah, I think we know where your priorities aren't. We're either dealing with a fatal disease, not only a spiritual, you know, spiritual awakening can solve, or not. And this step to me was very terrifying because, you know, it was the first time I ever told someone, like, hey, I was checking out my friend. Almost hooked up with a trainee. Battery charged my dad. My dad's not like a bad guy. He's like a really sweet, innocent Christian Catholic guy. Not cool. Like, none of my shit's cool. None of my stuff is like I ran a gang and did like bank robberies. I'm a goon. I'm a clown. And that was hard, like, you know. But then I sat across from my sponsor after I was just super thorough with it, and I said, I was just honest. I just said, this is it. This is me. And he said, I'm proud of you, man. And it was awesome. It was awesome because I realized talking to him and then also engaging other guys that are really in the book, really doing this deal, I'm not the only one, you know. And there's been a lot worse than my story. So I found a lot of comfort in that. And I remember trying to be like real methodical about this and forgetting. Sometimes that happens to me in the step work. I'll forget. I'll start to look, focus more on steps than I am like where I'm trying to get, right? I start to really adore and like slobber and drool on the steps as opposed to God, right? God is what's going to remove these things. The obsession, he's going to be what straightens out my OCD, my sexual issues, whatever, right? So I was just thorough and honest about it, and I just did it. And it wasn't pretty. Yeah, there was stuff I had to go back and look at again, but ultimately I just followed freaking directions. And we got to 6 and 7, and I think there's a reason they're short in the book. It's because God does it, we don't do it. Alright? Committed to God, to ourselves, entirely ready, humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. Like, we want, for me, I wanted to get this shit, like, gone. I wanted to go, right? I wanted to be like the guys I see here, remember, 10:30 meetings in the morning, like, warring, and other guys would be like, sweet, I'm gonna be like them one day. Anyways. I wanted to laugh. I wanted to have fun. I didn't have any friends either, so it wasn't hard for me to like let go of my past life. No one wanted to be around me. And then made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, we gotta pay the piper, right? Not always. But a lot of my amends, like, I was received very graciously. And my mind always tells me, like, it's going to be crazy. I laugh with my sponsor, like, go up to someone and be like, remember me? I ruined your life. And they're like, who are you? And you're like, damn, you don't remember? And you're like, no. Yeah, good luck with that, man. 12 it up. Walk on, right? But, you know, it's just, this stuff's really easy to do when we realize like what we're dealing with and really who we are, right? Because I realize through my inventory in the step one that I'm not shit. And I know people are like, gotta do your strengths also, gotta inventory that. But like, no, like there's nothing good that lies in me. I mean, I can try, act good, I can present good, but me running the show gets me with trannies, battery charges, and really crazy shit. So anyways, like I didn't go into these amends like, yes, I can't wait to do this. But I went because I knew the alternative. And I could either accept spiritual aid, or I could blot out the miserable existence till the end, or whatever it says. I could die. Whether it's by alcohol, or by shooting myself in the rooms, whatever. So after that, I mean, you're in the home stretch too. And at first I thought, especially when I work with guys, no, we wait. But no, like, when I work with a guy, we go right to 10 now. You know? This is like, there's nothing more important than one or the other. But this is where, like, that temporary relief that I got and, like, the nearness of my Creator through inventory and realizing, like, God can take this away, and He does. That's like, I wanted more of that. So 10, 11, and 12 is like from like the meat and potatoes for me now. And continuing to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. What I like to say about that is, again, the idea of it's cool. I love telling people they need to take an inventory, but do I take it every day? No, if I'm honest. And what happens is I think I'm here, and then I'm way over here. I think I'm something and forget the truth, that I am only the result of God's grace and His mercy. I'm not the reason I'm sober. And it starts to get real funky. When I lose sight of that, I guess I can go drink again, but it can get real crazy fast. So inventory is just important, right? I think some old Middle Eastern dude said, a life uninventoried. No, Galileo or one of those guys. He said something like, the uninventory life is a waste. And when I inventory, it's awesome. Because not only am I helping myself, but the guys I call and tell them, like, dude, I just thought about, man, wouldn't it be sweet if my parents died on a plane crash to Israel? I'd get all that money and stuff. And be like, dude, that happens to me too. And I'm like, sweet, you know? Or I'll expose some, like, fear that I have in the bedroom or fear that I have at work or whatever. And they're like, I had that same thing. Good, I'm not alone. I'm like, no, you're not. And they're like, what do we do now? Well, we look at the book, right? We got to look at the book. We got to go and see what the authors are telling us to do. And it's cool. Like, literally, if I want to be unselfish and I want to have those things in my life, all I do is seek God. That's it. Those things manifest kind of like, I won't go there because this isn't church. But those things will just appear in my life when I'm with God. That's just how it is for me. And I will not deviate from that. That's been my experience. So I think after I do have an inventory and other guys or I'm working with somebody and we find something, it's just to turn your attention. And the book's like super easy on us too. It says you don't have to act. You just turn your thoughts to someone you can help. It's like, oh, okay, I can do that. And whatever I inventory will sometimes just disappear. It'll just go away. Or it just won't have the grip on me anymore. You know, it's not like, I don't even remember inventorying that. No, it's not that. It's, man, God is good. I'm okay. This is going to be awesome. That's how I see it. And then thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. I think it's there for a reason. My experience is my lineage, my sponsor, they don't tell me what to do in any relationship or business situation. They say, ask God. That's a real dangerous place to be, in my experience, of asking people in Alcoholics Anonymous how to have a healthy relationship. That is, especially if they're not in one. It's like, right? So I go to God with these things. And usually if I'm honest with myself, like I'm learning to be in this program, God has put things on my heart. He said, no, this girl's not right. Or He said, no, this job isn't for you. Like I had a powder coating opportunity, and after prayer and meditation, it was absolutely evident that God's more concerned with my personal growth than He is with my professional growth. As cool as a turnkey operation would be, He wants me to experience it. So I said, okay. And I find that it's good to get around people that actually do that too. You know, there's not a lot of mysticism to it. Like God's there, at least for me. And if He doesn't show it in black and white, sometimes I just got to be patient. But ultimately, you know, He's the one running the show. If I just do His work, I get taken care of. It's really pretty cut and dry. And then having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message. You guys know it. Carry doesn't mean just sit in how place and wait for people. This is something that I do. You know, I see it as an action word. Go out, carry it. You know, the principles, I don't think those are them. I think those are the principles. I think they when they wrote the book, they were super clear. Carry these into everything I'm doing. And, man, I love life now. I don't want to kill myself. I have a creator who's, like, invested in me, who loves me, who wants, like, nothing but the best. It's incredible. Everything I was looking for when it was maybe a pair of clothing or a CD or a drug or alcohol or a girlfriend, I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I owe my relationship to God to this program. So I'm just grateful to be of service and share my experience. Thanks for letting me share.